We're at the 2018 SHOT Show. It's the after hours podcast party, I guess. I have the one and only Jeff Brozovich and Justin Crosley on the episode tonight. We're going to cover a few things. We're going to cover our love of the 7 Mag. We're going to cover Jeff's recent venture into ELR. What do they call that, Jeff? The ELR?
It was an event put on by ELR Central. It was their inaugural event. We been working on it for a year. There was a board of 54 people, industry people, as well as shooters and key players that we revised a set of rules. We got tired of hearing about these world records, you know, where a guy goes out and takes 3 cases of ammo and shoots, until one of them lands on a school bus and calls it a world record. So anyway, we came up with some rules. We had our first match, and it was a big success, and we did that last Sunday.
That I kind of followed. I'm not into ELR stuff as far as participating, but I followed along, and there was quite the debate on what the rules should be.
It was a long discussion. Like I said, we had a lot of people involved. We took input. We did polls. We the basic thing, we wanted to make it something creditable instead of just this ELR when people start sending bullets at, very long range and, making it look not predictable and all that type of stuff. You know, I mean, we wanted something that said this wasn't a fluke. This was a repeatable task. And so, anyway, in a nutshell, the end result is your rifle can't be fired for 4 hours. So your first shot is a cold bore, and you got to hit 3 for 3. We decided on a standard target size. We used at all ranges because when you get to a range to set up, you don't know how the terrain's going to lay. You can't be right on 1,700 yards. Maybe it needs to be 1750 or something like that. So we decided a standard target size was best. We went with the 36-inch target and decided to go with square because it's easier to obtain. And that way the same steel can be used at any distance, at any event, and passed around and things like that. So 3 out of 3, cold bore on a 36-inch target. And we set 3 records at the very first event.
So it's 36 by 36, no matter how far it goes out.
That's exactly right. And that's a big target when you start out here. And the other thing, we decided, we had to come up with a number of where ELR begins. And, it all depends on what you're shooting, obviously. But for this type of a thing, the number we put on it was 1,500 yards. So we considered, that's where we started. Two guys set the 1,500-yard record. And these records are just, this is a certificate that you achieved it under this criteria. Then obviously the ELR Central world record will be the guy that holds it at the farthest distance. So we had two guys go for 1,500 yards, and another guy come in there and school us all. And this was Nathan, I'm trying to pronounce his last name, Stalter, Nathan Stalter, and he's a son-in-law to David Tubbs, and let me tell you what, he had his act together. He came in there and went, now listen to this. Guy goes down in marginal conditions and goes 3 for 3 on his first attempt at 1,768 yards. Then in his afternoon, we did a second attempt 4 hours later, and he went 3 for 3 at 2,011 yards. So obviously proven what we set out to prove, that it is predictable. It's not a fluke, So now, that doesn't mean that the next event you have to start at 2,000 yards. You can always go back and shoot any distance you want. We wanted entry-level shooters to come into this ELR world, and if they want to do it again at 1,500, there's already two guys with their name in the books at 1,500, so ain't no different than if you shoot a Boone and Crockett buck and he scores 210, and then another guy comes along and scores one at 210, he still gets in the record book too. So it's a record. It's that you achieve this record, and it shows your skill set and your credibility to it. And no distance ever closes. You can set that record again, or you can opt for, and if you go to an event where they have an attempt in the morning, an attempt in the afternoon, maybe you want to just secure a 1,600-yard record in the morning, and then afternoon go for a 2100 to try to beat the farthest one out there.
And that's funny you say just set a 1600 yard record, because people that don't know, that is no easy task, Jeff.
It's not, and it's all about conditions, you know.
Right.
This new rifle I put together, and we'll probably talk about that a little later, but it's pretty incredible. I mean, it's pretty incredible what these things will do.
How does one begin that journey? Not necessarily the rifle part, but how you have a rifle or you want to get into this, how do they go about doing that?
You know, just look over the rules a little bit. You can look at you can look on their Facebook page at ELR Central. That's a division of Applied Ballistics. We have the rules posted on longrangeonly.com. Yeah, look them over, and you know, really, you don't have to, you know, if you just want to get your feet wet, you can bring your hunting rifle and try it. I mean, hey, the first guy to set the record there was shooting a Remington Sendero factory rifle with in 7mm STW with 195 grain burgers, and it had a fixed power SWFA super sniper scope on it.
That's crazy.
Yep. Like a 10 power or something?
Yeah, something. I don't know what it was, a 10 or a 14, but you know what? He had his stuff together. He knows his rifle, and he went 3 for 3 at 1,500 yards. Boom, boom.
That's impressive.
That is impressive. Yeah. So you can do that. And when's the next event? Are they have them every month, every bi-monthly? How does it work?
We're not sure at this point. We got the first one in the books. We wanted to do that right before SHOT Show. There is a lot of industry buy-in in this. There's a lot of big sponsors stepping on. I'll tell you one thing. I didn't even know this was happening because I was so busy with getting my rifle and that and everything. But we had a banquet and a dinner meeting after, you know, where everybody could come and talk about it and give input on it and that. And the sponsors and the major industry players that jumped into this thing and the donations, I've never seen a price table like this. I mean, it was they were giving away Night Force scopes. I mean, you know, so we awarded the people. There's really, it's not a match, okay? Mm-hmm. So obviously there were some bigger awards go to the guys that set records, but then they drew for the rest of the prizes. And golly, ATAC R's, SIG Kilo 2400s. I mean, SIG Sauer got behind this. McMillan Stocks got behind it. Cutting Edge Bullets. Warner Tool had bullets. I mean, there's a lot of industry buy-in here, and this is going somewhere. I really believe in this, that this is going to be something that, you know, and you can do it with your hunting rifle, or you can get crazy like I did and build some monster to take out there to burn a whole bunch of powder.
But you're looking a lot further than 1,600 yards or even 2,000 yards, right, Jeff?
I am. I don't know about setting a record there, but, you know, the way you learn is to go out there farther than you really plan on doing it, because you magnify all the errors and they show up really big. And so the very next day, a bunch of us headed out to the desert here, and it was kind of funny. We're crossing this big Air Force base, and turned a drone on, and it comes up on the screen, this is a no-fly zone. So I won't say whether we did or did not use the drone that day, but we had forward observers, and I fired the first shot that day. And we started at 4,125 yards.
Wow.
I dialed up 264 MOA, and I had 9 minutes of spin drift dialed and about another 5 minutes of wind. I was shooting at we just had some steel out there, a 44-inch square, which isn't regulation, but we weren't trying to set records now. We're just practicing. We're just getting some shoot time in when we're out here in the middle of a desert where we can shoot on flat terrain like that. Anyway, my first round missed left edge by 6 inches.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. You know what I like about all that is I watched a lot of videos of the longest shot. You know, those guys are taking like 15, 30, 40 shots trying to hit a sheet of plywood. And I don't think there's any, to me anyway, that's just not very valid.
That's what we're trying. I mean, you know, and hey, it's just call it what it is. You know, if it's like we were doing yesterday and you're just out there in the desert with a bunch of guys and you're slinging some long range and having fun.
Yeah.
You know, and Paul Phillips, but, you know, he hit the plate on his sixth shot at 4,001. And, you know, this is 2.3 miles, guys.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, it's insane.
And get this, my bullets I was sending at that thing were subsonic for almost the last mile of that journey. You know, they went subsonic. And – you know, they made it through the transition and they still impact. And I was shooting a 400 grain cutting edge lasers, and they're leaving the muzzle at 3,154 feet per second, and they were arriving at the target at like 700 or 800 feet per second.
Wow.
Well, that brings up your rifle and components. Kind of take us through your build and why you went with that build.
Well, it's been a long process of building this rifle, and I named the rifle Against All Odds because every single thing that could go wrong went wrong. I mean, it has been a bear. But anyway, we'll skip all the problems we had, and one barrel, I mean, we had problems with chips stuck in the reamer and rung the throat, you know, so I had to, or rung the case wall, so we had to either set the barrel back or start with another one. So luckily, when I ordered the barrels, I ordered a few of them. And so anyway, at that point, I decided, well, I'm not going to get done for that, you know, that match I wanted to go to, so I took a step back, and I kind of designed my own reamer, and then I run it by Mitch Fitzpatrick that's built a lot of, from Lethal Precision Arms, that's built a lot of these bigger rifles, and Mitch liked the look of this design, and we kind of compared notes a little bit there, but anyway, it's pretty much a design just like I wanted, and what it is it's a, it's pretty much just a 375 Chi-Tac improved, I start out with a 408 Chi-Tac case so I can, because I'm moving my shoulder so far forward, when I neck size down from 408, it creates a little false shoulder and gives it something to register for the fire for me, something to close the chamber against. And so I'm moving the shoulder forward about 120 thousandths, changed it to a 40-degree improved shoulder, 11 thousandths case taper. And so she'll, I forget what exact case volume was. I think it was right at 170 grains of water.
Jeez.
But I'm loading the...
Just a little guy.
149 grains at H50 BMG. And
how much?
149
grains.
So,
wow.
Yeah, so, a lot of fire foreman, a lot of things. So anyway, I wanted to build a heavy gun. I want to build something so I can watch my impacts and everything. So this gun's got a 36-inch barrel. It's the size of a truck axle. It's an inch 450 at the shank. And
Jiminy.
T5 Terminator brake that's about 5 inches long, 5-port brake, and it is a pleasure to shoot. I got it in a Macmillan B stock that's highly adjustable on the back, and I can adjust the recoil pad up, down, twist it at an angle. You know, I can adjust the cheek weld up and down, tip it if I want to. It's a very adjustable gun. Got a Phoenix bipod on it that's got a little wheel on the bottom. I can spin it up and down to raise it and lower the front. You know, the bag for this gun is specifically built for a rear bag so that the taper on the bottom of the stock matches the taper on the bag so they fit together. Hmm. And I'm shooting what I call semi-recoil. Some guys call it do a free recoil thing, but I apply a little pressure to the back of the stock with my shoulder. I put a light pull on the pistol grip just enough that I know that I've got a hold of the gun, mm-hmm. You know, and then you reach up and you just kind of touch the trigger off. So the gun will recoil back an inch and a half, 2 inches, and then slide right back forward. The bipod actually has skis on it. I run it on carpet, so the gun can free recoil back, and then it slides right forward. And I've yet to not spot an impact through the scope on that thing. I mean, it's real manageable.
How much does that weigh?
34 pounds.
Ooh, mountain rifle.
Yeah. Sheep gun. Yeah.
It might be a bear gun.
It's a sheep gun, but you don't do that hiking shit. You don't hike in.
So how long from start to finish before it got together and you're actually forming brass?
A little over a year. I started this about this time last year, and I got the gun about 2 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks before we headed down here for SHOT Show, and I needed to bed it into the stock and fire form brass and work up loads. And in Montana in the wintertime, you know, trying to do load development when it's 7 below and snowing every day, wasn't much fun. I mean, I literally come outside every day and shoveled a spot to lay down prone and start shooting and doing load development.
That's not much time to do that.
No, it wasn't. But luckily everything, you know, everything there as far as load development was easy. And the most amazing part of this whole deal was, and this comes from having a lot of good components, you know, whether it be the bullets or whether it be, you know, just the consistency of the powder or the case design or whatever it may be, or the nice rifle build that, you know, Mitch did when he chambered these barrels for me. But I put the lab radar next to this thing, and it showed me what it wanted to do for velocity. I plugged that into the Applied Ballistics mobile app, and I haven't tweaked nothing. I have done no correcting on
really?
This. No, I've done nothing. This gun is, it's on at 900, it's on at 1300, it's on at 1600, I tell you what, my first shot was with perfect elevation and went just left of that plate at 4,100 yards.
That's interesting.
You know, I was going to ask Jeff, or maybe talk about real quick. So one thing you mentioned was that bullet is going so far subsonic. Mm-hmm. And subsonic or not, as the bullet slows down, the BC changes, right? When, especially, I mean, 500 yards doesn't matter, but that longer stuff. And just that's something that people don't realize, right? The box says it's whatever it's BC.
It's all relevant to velocity. I don't think it always has to be that it drops BC as it slows down. It can actually roller coaster a little bit and come back up at certain mm-hmm. points, some almost like a harmonic type thing. But I'm not using, in my predictions, I'm not using a G1 or a G7 BC like we're all familiar with.
Right.
I'm using the custom drag models that Applied Ballistics has worked out for that bullet. And it's, I got to say, it's spot on. I mean, it's amazing.
What are you using to calculate those shots? The shot 4,000 or the shot at 2,000? What are you using? A Kestrel? What are you using for that?
Obviously I ranged the thing and I jumped up in rangefinders too. I sold my Vectronics PLRF-10 and bought the PLRF-15.
Oh, the cheaper one.
So second mortgage on the house and bought a PLRF-15 but I can range a steel plate at 4,100 yards. You know,
Jeff's wife's just shaking her head in here.
So it starts out with an accurate range, and then I get my ballistic information from my Kestrel or my environmental information from my Kestrel, and it all goes into my AB mobile ballistic app, you know.
And you found that to be pretty much money?
It is money. It is. It's amazing. I was just talking to Brian Lentz. I ran into him at the 6-hour range day the other day, and I just said, I got to tell you, man, this is incredible. It's on even at all these distances. And he says, well, that's what it's supposed to be, ain't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing I always go back to is that's like my staple. That's my validator is that 5700 Elite Kestrel, because mm-hmm. every year it seems like a new gadget, new rangefinder, new this, new that. But I can always plug it into there and make sure it verifies what that rangefinder is, using a SIG 2400 or whatever rangefinder you're using.
Well, this is kind of, you know, we'd have never thought that, well, just think about this, because a few years ago, Ryan, would you ever thought anybody'd lay down and go 3 for 3 at a mile or go 3 for 3 at 2,000 yards? I mean, and know they were going to do it without it taking a sighter or anything? You know, we used to talk about this, you know, even at distances far shorter than that where we, you know, we'd like to have a sighter, you know, for long range hunting, you know, before we engage the target, because we didn't have the confidence level that we do today.
Right. And
the equipment is changing. I mean, these bullets, these lathe turned bullets like Cutting Edge produces are incredible. And I'm going to tell you what, I just seen a post tonight, and I'm going to look up Warner Tool at the SHOT Show tomorrow. They're just released a 400 grain Warner Tool with a BC over one, it's like 1.1 or one.
Something
like
wow!
That. Oh my God! We got to look at some of them babies. I've got some of their 361s, and I just ran out of time, so I put some Cutting Edge in it, you know, and they shot well, and I just didn't have time to test a whole bunch of bullets. So I went with the CE 400 lasers, you know, and so anyway, yeah, we're getting, there's some stuff out there. Everything technology wise coming around. And that's kind of what this whole ELR venture is about, you know. Let's maximize all this technology and learn what it is way out there, and then step it back when we want to, transfer it over to our hunting. You know,
right.
We can use that precision and technology in hunting, but obviously we're not going out to look for 2,000 or 4,000 yard shots on game. I mean, that's not what we're doing here. But we can surely apply some of what we learn to make us better on our hunting side of it.
No, I think it's great. I know a lot of people have like to think it's a voodoo thing, and there's this 2,200 yard rock that I always shoot at, and I can say in the last, I really got into long range shooting in 2009, 2010. And it went from maybe hitting that thing. Well, I don't even think I could start shooting that till I got a good scope in 2012. Maybe hitting that thing once every 10 or 12 shots to probably shooting it one out of two, hitting it one out of three, one out of two. But I do worry about people just jumping into the long range genre on the hunting side and seeing all this happen and just believe that they can just, you know, 1400 yards out of the box kind of stuff. I worry about that a little bit.
You know, I say I didn't have any time for practice, you know, with this 2 week, you know, deal of slamming this gun together, getting everything going and coming to this match. And for those that are wondering how I did at the match after that fire drill and getting down here, I had my dope up, and I just wanted to get a record in the books, you know. So I said, I'm taking the 1,500 yard target because I just knew, hey, this is a done deal, right? Yeah. So I laid down to do that, and I brought my app up, and I was trying to read my wind, and kind of, I wasn't paying enough attention to the mirage, but I was trying to read my wind, and we were kind of up on a high pedestal or a plateau we were shooting from, and my app says 1.9 left, and I thought, it's just not going to take that much. You know, it's just not going to take that much. So I dialed, for my first shot, I dialed, you know, 1.25 minutes and sent it right alongside the edge of the plate. So dialed the 2 minutes and went boom, boom, put two more on the plate. So I hit 2 out of 3 on my first one. And then the conditions went to, they pretty much went in the toilet by the time we made our second attempt. The afternoon warmed up. The winds got crazy and squirrely out there. And I was watching dust go in two different directions in some places, and it got a little tougher. So I decided, because those other records had been set, I went for the 2011 yard plate too, and I was about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left on my first one. I brought it back. I got a little gust, and I just missed the plate on my second one on the left edge, and the third one I hit the plate, you know. So I ended up, I connected on both the targets, but... no cigar, man. Wasn't good enough.
I think that's important. You can go over to your site, longrangeonly.com, and look at, you put up the scores.
I did.
And there's some phenomenal shooters that didn't hit any steel.
Yeah.
And I just want to relay that to guys getting into shooting at live targets. Remember that the wind is the overall king.
Absolutely.
And you got to respect that. And I think if you can do that, I think it breaks down to this. You need to be good enough to know on animals when not to shoot. And when you get to that level, I think you're good to go.
That's what we always say. You know, our motto at Long Range Only is we do long range right. And the other thing we always reiterate is it is the most important thing. And I like using this phrase that you just used because it applies to every method of take of hunting, whether it be archery, whether it be handgun, whether no matter what. But it just, or whether it be Grandpa's 30-06 with a 4-power weaver, right?
Right.
But
exactly.
The hardest, you know, the most important part is knowing when not to shoot, not when to pull the trigger, when not to. You know, that's something we all got to know at any distance, at any,
absolutely,
at any, you know, any method.
That takes me back to your bear. Your 1,700 and, you know, two, or what was it, three?
1,702.
1,702, that little tiny shot across that canyon. And when there was, what, six spotters?
There were, yeah.
Five spotters on
five
that
or line? Six of us.
Yeah.
And this was the fact that you know when Jeff puts the time in. There's at least six or seven of us watching that shot. We all told Jeff, man, you shot high. And Jeff looked at me and he goes, Ryan, I'm pretty sure I had to hit that bear. It's on the video.
Yep, it is. It was exactly what you said. We said you shot high, and he turned around and not in a cocky bullshit way, nothing like that. He just looked at it and goes, I don't think so.
Yep.
I won't forget that.
And I didn't doubt him. I just said, well, the good thing is if we got it on video, we'll go back and we'll put it on the bigger laptop and we'll check it out. And sure as shit, Jeff crushed that bear through the heart. And that just tells me that Jeff just isn't going out and spraying and praying.
I'm not. Before I came down here with that gun, even in that crunch period for 2 weeks there, there's been 180 rounds down that barrel before I got here, you know, and some of that was fire forming rounds, but I was taking advantage of those, you know, and shooting wherever I could. My biggest fear was, even for a match, I mean, you got to be prepared. You don't do long range, you know, there we go. We do long range right. You don't do it. Nothing's hurry up about this deal. And that's what I like about it. It's the right time that you can take to do a well-executed shot and a precise aim point, you know. And we came down, you know, Diane and I came down a day early, and I jumped off the interstate up here north of town on that Friday, and we just headed up a road. I think we went 13 miles before I found a road going into the BLM. And guess what? I jumped out and checked zero because I didn't know what this gun was going to do in 50-degree, 60-degree weather when I'd done all my development and all my testing in anywhere from 7 below to 20 above, you know. And so, I spent an afternoon out there in the desert by myself checking zeros and shot it to 2,050 yards that day and got a little confidence and then, you know, did all the testing I could before I even went to this event.
That's a good thing about Nevada.
Yeah, you can shoot about anywhere. It's 85% or 82% public ground, whatever.
Nice weather for the most part.
Yeah.
All right, well, you kind of beat that horse to death. That was pretty interesting. I also want to get into, I didn't bring this up to you on our before we started this, but I want to get into that the Christensen Arms ELR rifle you hunted with this year.
The
ELR.
Not the Mesa.
No, the ELR.
Okay.
The one that you, well, correct me if you're wrong. The video you took it out of the box and shot it, basically.
That was a Mesa Long Range.
Yeah. And then but you did take your ELR Christensen out and killed a whole bunch of elk with it, with a bunch of people.
Right? I actually put that with a friend of mine that's on my pro staff and does, if I got something sitting around, some gear that we want to get some more field time on, you know, I've got guys that I say, hey, take this and just do some hunting with it. So a friend of mine, Zach Raymond, he took that rifle and, Jimmy, Christmas, I don't know how many elk they killed with it, but like he I know one day he had three of them.
Oh, man.
Not far from my house. It's like he had elk everywhere because him and his fiance, they had both went out and whacking elk out there with him. So. But it took a lot of elk, yeah.
Well, I just want to throw that on there because you hear all the time is, and I do think in the past, you know, we're both fans of Christian's Arms. All three of us are fans of Christian's Arms. And I think they did have some QC issues before, but it seems like they're pretty much got her dialed in now.
They absolutely do. And, you know, people think that maybe we get cherry-picked rifles and stuff like that. But let me tell you something. I've bought a number of barrels from Christensen, and there's no way they'd know. I mean, we're talking about an unthreaded, unchambered barrel blank, and there's no way they'd know what they're sending me. And I'm hunting with these guns, and they're on my, you know, with these barrels, and they're on my rifles, and I've yet to have one that wouldn't shoot as good as I expected it to.
No, I agree with that because I've said this before, I would get, this was in the past, and I've probably had now 15 different rifles. I got one that would shoot, one that didn't, but my last four rifles from them have been fantastic.
Yep. And I've shot quite a few of the less, you know, the ridge lines and I've got the Mesa that I've been reviewing and I've got a lot of friends been buying those ridge lines cause they're such a good value and I haven't seen one yet that doesn't shoot.
Well, that's what my son Daniel's hunting with, you know, it's a ridge line and 300 win. And, I've got several friends, you know, said, hey, we want to do something, you know, we want to be able to shoot out there a little ways and something to do, you know, we all hunt elk where I'm from. And so, we bought them, you know, I've had them get Ridgelines and 300 Win Mag, and a lot of them are shooting factory ammo through them, you know, the Burger 215 ABM ammo, or we've even shot some of that 6 Hour with the 190 grain SMKs through some of them. And, I mean, they're shooting like, a lot of them will shoot a half minute, you know.
And, what was the one that was a real tight group, the guy that shot the Buffalo?
That was ABM 215 grain factory ammo in a Ridgeline 300 Win Mag, and we put the Slayer brake on it. We upgraded the Slayer brake because we didn't want the dirt storm, you know, out of the radio.
Yep, that's what they should all come with.
Dirt storm.
So he came and he came and we dialed that thing in, and he bought a Sig Kilo, and we went out and did some shooting for a day, and that was actually U.S. Senator Steve Daines, you know, from Montana, and. And Steve went home and got solid with it, shot a group that went like 0.3 and showed me that. And they've taken several animals with it this year. And Walt Backey had you talk about them 215 burgers. Anybody that's listened to me ramble on very much has heard me talk about how fond I am of that bullet. But Steve goes out and he draws a buffalo tag. And he goes after this 2,000-pound bull buffalo. And most of the guys, you know, he only shot at 100 yards, you know, but, you know, there's people out there that worry, oh, buffalo hides so thick and those bullets fragment, you know, fragment so much, you know. Most of the guys that shoot buffalo shoot them about 3 inches below the ear, you know, and attack the central nervous system and drop them in their tracks. But Steve elected to do the my favorite shot, you know, in the crease behind the shoulder on this 2,000-pound buffalo with his 300 Win Mag at 100 yards. And Jesus. He said it literally just humped up and dropped right on top of its leg. So pretty impressive.
I was also going to ask you, how did your 7 Mag do this year?
You know, I can't find it.
Propping a door open somewhere, Jeff?
It might be up there at my elk camp. I might have used that thing to stake down the corner of the camp. I think.
There's a recent thread on Rockslide, and Jeff told me, going into 2017, he told me the fun he had with that 7300, and I didn't doubt him. I don't doubt Jeff most every time he isn't messing with you. Jeff is pretty on it, especially on rifle calibers, but I had to build one. So I built a 28, had Red Rock build me a 28 Nauser, and it was a fantastic gun, super accurate. I loaded the 180s to try them and the 195s. I shot 2 elk with mine. My son shot an elk. And then I witnessed 2 more people shoot elk with those rifles. Actually, 3 more people. So 6 elk total. And all of them but one took extra shots. And the cow that I shot took 4 shots to bring it down. So
And where was your first shot on that, Ryan? Was it pretty
right
good?
Through the lungs. And Tanya's like, I think you hit it. But so she's like... I had a can on that 7 and the 28, and it sounded solid to me. And then sure enough, she started kind of falling out of the herd because I didn't want to shoot again because I didn't know, you know, how you get in those groups. You don't want to shoot twice because you don't know which cow it is. And then pretty soon she was dragging behind, her head was down, and she kind of shot. And I was like, well, where did I hit her? I shot her again, hit her in the guts, shot again, hit her in the guts. And then when, by the time I walked up to her, which I walked that, I don't know, 800,000 yards, she still was alive. I had to shoot her in the head. The bull I shot was 442 yards. I shot him. I'm by myself, and I thought I heard it hit. I couldn't tell, but he turned, and nothing in North Idaho is flat.
It's right.
All steep. He turned and ran 80 yards up like a 40-degree slope, and I'm guessing that I got back on him, and I just as he was cresting the ridge, he kind of just barely came to a kind of a stop to look back, and I pulled the trigger, hit him high shoulder, and he dropped, but I hit him right through the lungs. And then my son hit a bull that was bedded, and I was shooting enough 300s to know if I shot a bedded bull with a 230 grain of a 300 rum, he wouldn't have got up. But he got to his feet, and he was dead bull walking. And I think the moral of the story is we're not saying, I know Jeff's not saying, I know Justin wouldn't say this, 7 mag, 28, 7 mag, 30 or 7300 isn't going to kill the elk. It's just the time it takes from that first shot till it's dead. If you're hunting northern Idaho in that kind of timber or any place for that matter, that time on their feet could be a lost animal if you're not quick enough to get on them.
It is. And I had that happen years and years ago, and I blame the bullets, but the worst problem I ever had, this is over 10 years ago, but the worst problem I ever had was with seven when I was hunting with just a straight 7 rim mag and shooting 168s. That combination is just, it doesn't anchor them good. And we had, between me and another guy, we had 2 elk that year that, you know, packed our bullets off, took off with them.
Packed our bullets off.
And we were able to recover one in the dark, snowing, and we tracked it. This is no BS because I had a GPS with me. 4.7 miles was our track.
Jeez.
And we shot him right at dark in a snowstorm. And he was laying, he was bedded, he was done. He wasn't going any further, I don't think. But he was still sitting up, and he was turned around on the trail and was looking back out at us. And we shoved another one in him. And then the other one that same season.
How far was that shot? How far was it?
Oh, like a couple hundred yards.
Gotcha.
And it was a good hit, you know.
4.7 miles as a crow flies, or just
yeah, he was barely bleeding. That was back when I shot. I won't. I'm not going to bullet bash, so I'm not going to name what it was. But most people figured out, but it was a solid copper bullet. And And this was back before.
Did it have X in the name?
They've made a lot of improvements since then.
No, I'm not going to bash them. The blue ones were terrible, thanks. But I think they've gotten better.
But that bull, that you know, I shot the shot we finished him with was he was looking at us, you know, bedded, and you know, I put it in, you know, under his chin, and obviously that took him right out. But
how many hours later was that?
Oh gosh, you know, we lost his trail once in the herd, and we had to go back and find it, and he didn't have a big blood trail, but he was bleeding. But that thing just whizzed through both lungs. And it was in and out, same size. And that, I don't, you know, I've seen more than one guy say on there, you know, oh, if you put a hole through both lungs, they're not going far. Well, I'm calling BS, buddy, because I've lived it. And you better put a big ass hole through both lungs if you don't want a bull elk to go very far. And here's the other thing. The other one we lost. So you talk about meat destruction and all that. Well, guess what? We lost 100% of the meat on this one. And, it was the next day when we found him, and it was only by birds that we found him. And what he did was he got down in this big old draw, and we didn't have snow on this deal, and we lost the blood trail, and we looked and we looked and we looked. But he actually crawled into a nest of cedars, and he was completely hidden. Mm-hmm. I mean, we looked in the dark, we looked in the daylight. I mean, we did what we should to try to find him, but we didn't find him until the next day. And, you know, we go in there, and there's the hole in and out both sides, you know. And he had leaked out laying there when his chest cavity finally filled up with some blood, you know, he had more of a blood puddle in his bath, or in his bed, I mean, than he, you know, so I, you know, but then he was doing when he was traveling. But that was a loss for that. So those were both 7 mags with 168s. Some of these elk are just pretty hard to anchor, and you know, now, I wanted to ask you, too, Ryan. You said on your bull, where did your first bullet go?
Through both lungs.
So you did, you hit him right.
Oh, and it was the same thing, and I looked. It destroyed, like, the lung going in wasn't terribly bad. The exit into the next lung was pretty big hole. The first hole was kind of, not a pencil. I mean, it was probably the size of a nickel.
And all the rocket science in the world out there and the brain surgeons and rocket scientists that we've had conversation with that'll tell us that on paper it doesn't figure out. I'll agree with them 100% on paper. You tell me why a 284,000 diameter bullet and a 308,000 diameter bullet, why there is so much difference in the terminal performance as far as anchoring the game. I agree 100%. They're going to die. They got a hole through them. They're going to die.
Yep.
But you can lose them, and I've done it. I thought that 7mm deal when the 195s came out was going to be the ticket. I had mm-hmm. barrels on top of my gun safe. I was ready to rebarrel. All I had to do was rebarrel my 300 Win Mags, change the bushing in my dice, and build 7 300s, and I was there. And the velocity was good, all that. But after we seen about 14 elk that season with them, and, you know, 90% of them took 2 shots, I give up.
Yep. And you're not talking like that they need another shot to kill them. You're saying we got to shoot them again to anchor them there so we don't have to go find them and track them, right?
They're going off to die. I'm not.
But that's a big deal, though, when you're long range shooting.
It's a big deal because you can lose them, especially when you're hunting like we do all those, you know, when we do those management hunts, we hunt basically evenings, you know, because in the mornings they're leaving the hayfield.
Sure.
And in the evenings, you know, we're sitting there waiting for them to come to the salad bar, you know, and we you know, but it's going to get dark.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you right now, above the hayfield is all sagebrush. You want to try to do something hard. Try to find an elk that's down up there in that sagebrush at night with a flashlight. All you do with a flashlight is make shadows everywhere and you can't find them.
So, right.
You know, I need them to go down at least within a couple hundred yards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if one puts the death walk on and hunches up and it's walking along and it goes down, you know, I got no problem with that. But, you know, if they go back in the herd, like you said, where you can't put another one in them because they go back to the herd, and they will. They'll use every last bit of everything they got to get their herd animal. They're going back to the herd if they can.
I think the problem that I have with people is, And I know this is for all three of us, I don't give a shit which one works, which one doesn't. I literally built that 28 Nosler so my son and my wife could shoot it because it had less recoil than a 300. I don't have no dog in the fight. If that 7 would have worked, if it would have been a better bullet with a 180 or 195, you can bet your ass I'd still be shooting it. But every time I talk to somebody that has any knowledge that I trust, and every time I witness it, there's no way that I can... I almost, and people are going to be really pissed when I say this, but I almost think it's fucking inhumane to shoot an elk with a 20 or the 284 bullet.
Well, here's the deal, you know. So they say the mathematics don't line up, that, you know, that gun's got this much energy, and the 28 Knopfler's got this much energy, and blah, 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 and all this, you know, over the 300 Win Mag or the 300 Rum and all that. Okay, so what? But why don't it kill? I can't explain that, but here's the fact of the thing. You know, if you're going to go along with that, if they did kill better, why wouldn't we be hunting with
them? Absolutely. Right.
Why wouldn't we? You know, obviously, I know there's we're fortunate. You know, we've got our choice, you know, of what guns we want to hunt with, and that's what we do, right? So I can hunt with any damn thing I want.
Absolutely.
You know, there is no reason in the world for me to hunt with a 30 caliber over a 284 just because I got some axe to grind. That's idiotic to even suggest that.
Right.
We killed, you know, we've killed 160 some elk in the last three seasons. I need them dead. But obviously, if there was an advantage that shined, I'll guarantee you I'm going out there with what's going to put the elk down the best.
And right.
That's what I hunt with.
Yeah, we are.
I have a choice. I don't have to hunt with that one gun because that's all my budget would leave me. And it's not that I'm rich. It's just I'm very fortunate with the connections I have. I got plenty of choices when I hunt for rifles.
All three of us are in that boat. And it's, and I probably have four or five other guys that are in the same boat as us. And they all tell me the same thing. And one guy you all saw off his barrel on YouTube or on Instagram, and it wasn't a 7, but he'll tell you the same thing about a 7. He's like, you just have to shoot these elk too many times with these calibers to make it worth it.
Right.
And none of us like to chase animals.
And I think the thing that people, like you said, you built a 28 for recoil, right?
Yep.
But you put an effective break on a 300 Rum or a 300 Win Mag, and my 10-year-old son shoots it, and he likes it. So with the technology we have, where's the advantage, right?
That's exactly right. You know, I mean, there's just, I don't know. There's just no reason not to. I mean, you can tame down any of them today. You know, I mean, my wife Diane, you know, she shot that 338 Lapua ELR. She X-ringed her bull or her cow elk at 688 yards and seen the dirt fly on the other side of it through the scope. That's a 7.5-pound rifle with a 300-grain burger in it. And today, we have rifles with stocks that are made to reduce the felt recoil, and we have brakes out there to take the sting out of it to the point where you can climb on a rifle and watch the bullet go through the elk at 688 yards. You know, it's there's no reason not to. I mean, recoil's not a big thing for me anymore.
Yeah, if you don't know Diane, she's a little bitty lady.
She is, but she does a good job shooting them, and that was what shocked me most. You know, I put her on a 338 Lapua with a 300 grain. There you go, shoot that one there, and we got it all on video, and you can see that cow turns around and goes to take off running. It makes about 75 yards, and you know it's got a severe internal oil leak, and it tips over. But she X-rung it, but she, again, you know, the same old thing. It's on the side of a mountain, so you see the dirt fly up behind it. But she saw that and thought maybe she went high, but it would actually pass through and then hit the dirt.
Yeah.
She's seen that through the optic. You know, think about that.
Yeah.
And well, that's good form, and it's good recoil reduction.
Yeah, and a stock that fit her, that was adjusted for her, and a brake that took the sting out. You know, I mean, it lets you stay on the rifle.
Well, she may be a better shooter than half the people listening to this.
Better than me, for sure.
Well, I know Tanya, when she gets set up, she can shoot well, and so can my son. So it is about form and function, and we are fortunate to use very good products. Very good products. Jeff, I'd like to ask you about a little more long range only. What are you guys doing? What are you guys up to? What's the future of 2018 for long range only?
Oh, man, we've got, we brought on some new editors. We got Luke Connor out of Alaska. Luke's going to do some stuff. We're actually going to do a moose hunt this year. I'm pretty excited about that. I think Luke and I are going to try to get together and maybe do a little elk hunting too.
Nice.
And then Jose Gardner has come on board with us, and Jose's doing some reviews and stuff. Jose shoots a little PRS, so we'll have his perspective on some of the, you know, stuff that leans towards that way. And then Justin Heyer. Justin is kind of became our senior editor. Justin has a huge knowledge, you know, he's engineering type background and stuff. And when that guy does a review and looks it over, you know, he does a really good job for us. So we're going to continue doing the reviews, you know, and a lot of good hunts. And hopefully with these other guys coming on board, they'll relieve some of the pressure on me too. And the other thing was, we need more than one man's opinion on all this stuff. You know,
Absolutely.
I was doing all the reviews I could, but I'd have to think that people get tired of hearing what I have to say about everything. So I want to get some quality people out there, you know, doing some more of these reviews so we can give, you know. And one of the other thing, you know, give a perspective from other people. But one of the other things I want to do is we got some of this stuff like these Christensen Arms rifles. We got some optics out there from Six Hour and whatnot that we've had in our hands now, and we've been hunting with them, and my editor's been hunting with them and using them for over a year now. We're gonna start a little deal. We're gonna revisit them reviews and do like a follow up review.
That's a good idea. Yep. So we've been doing on Rock Slide.
After we've been beating them things for over a year use, what's our opinions today?
Have they changed?
Has anything showed up that we changed? Has anything showed up that we didn't like? Or, or how's it performing a year later?
Right.
When you really know what you're hunting with.
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
We have done that on a few of our articles, gone back.
Yep.
And some people have changed their minds. And it is kind of the abuse test. Did this work? Did it last? Or is my opinion the same? And I like it when, you know, opinions change over time. And something you thought was going to be great may not be great.
It is. And, you know, there's things I take out there, and it's just like I use it a couple times, like, you know what, this thing ain't for me. But that doesn't mean it's a bad product. It just ain't for me. Right. So I usually pawn it off on somebody else.
I don't really like this. You can have it.
You can get after this and see. You know what? They may love it. You know, right. But for me, myself, when I find something I do want to continue using, it takes me a long time to decide I'm in love with it. You know, because like we talked about before, we don't have to hunt with anything just because we bought it and we own it and we're stuck with it.
Right.
We do have options. And So yeah, I have to hunt with something quite a while before it becomes a permanent piece of gear in my pack.
Yeah,
well, that makes me wonder what's the conclusion on the executive order? How you with the full season under your belt with it?
It's a fine rifle. I was concerned about the 9-twist, the added velocity, and that 9-twist deal on how those bullets were going to perform the 215 Burger with. At short range, and you know what? I do this stuff all year long, and my elk this year, 112 yards.
you stretched it out.
Well, it was right above a ranch road, and I was hiding behind this little rock over here, you know, and I'm almost, I knew I was grinning from ear to ear, because it just kept walking up the hill closer, you know, and so I stuffed one of them, and you know what? I got a 308 entrance, and took out the far rib with about a golf ball size exit. She did a half circle and folded up about 15 feet above the road. So
that's a good hunt.
That's perfect. Back to the truck and picked her up.
That brings up a good thing too, or a good point, I think, Jeff, is the three of us, none of the three of us would take a long shot if we didn't have to. If we can get, we always get as close as we can to make the most effective, or at least make the most efficient, effective shot we can to kill the animal.
Absolutely. I mean, it's we talked about this, actually, on a podcast I did a while back,
you
know, people have that perspective that we're out there trying to shoot as far as we can. And we probably should reflect back to that bear that I took at 1,702 yards. We hiked in the rain another mile to scrape off 200 yards, but we got 200 yards closer.
Yep. Right.
And I had taken that shot with that rifle over and over and over. I mean, I have that favorite mile rock at my place that I pound the crap out of. And I just hit that rock the week before. I was on that TV show with Jim Burnworth, you know, and I knew exactly what that gun was doing. And you know, like I said, when I went down on that thing solid, and there was just no reason that bear wouldn't die. I mean, I knew.
And it was, what did we find it? 10 yards. It went downhill 10 yards from where you shot it.
We found it. And we knew about where it was standing, and you found blood, and you didn't go over it. Well,
it was right there.
Up there because we had the whole visual of that hillside. And
right.
All those spotters, and there's one little small patch of trees.
Yep.
And you remember I headed for that patch of trees.
Oh, yeah.
In there when you hollered, you found it, you know. And,
yep.
And we knew it was there.
But, absolutely.
It never came out of that patch of trees. It never went up over the hill. It couldn't get away. We knew it was there somewhere.
Yep.
You know? Yeah, we had like $90 million of optics looking at that hillside.
Yep.
And that, like I said, I knew that was a sure shot. If you remember, it rained on us going in.
Yep.
We had wisps of fog in the air.
Right.
And I never discussed it on a video, but as we were watching, remember we had to wait for a little bit of that fog to clear, and we were watching the last of that fog, and some of them wisps clear. Give you guys a little pointer on what I was doing there, and I haven't shared this very many times. I have a couple times, I think. But so I'm on the reticle, and I knew what the flight time was on that shot, you know. And I'm on the reticle watching that, and you can actually clock it, you know, how many minutes the angle it moved in the flight time of the bullet.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it pretty much told me what my wind hold needed to be, you know. And by clocking that fog moving out, I could actually, that little wisp of fog, I could actually go 1,001, 1,002, 1,003 and knew how many minutes of the wind I needed to dial if we spot on. You
know? Yep. Well, I know from cutting that bear up that, and I tell people this all the time when I talk about that hunt, you could not have made a better shot at 25 yards. That was that shot was dead on, heart shot on a bear. I mean, you just couldn't do it better. So
it entered the crease, and he was angled a little bit, and it came out front edge of the far shoulder and the base of the neck.
Yep.
Yeah, if you make a heart shot, you can't make it any That's better.
No, man. Agreed.
You got to take out the oil pump.
Yep.
Yeah, and the crazy thing was still is, I remember it like it was yesterday. Jeff, like, I pulled a shot, and I was like, "You shot high," and Jeff's like, "I don't think I did."
Man. I don't think so.
And I thought about it for a second, and I was like, "Maybe he didn't." And I mean, obviously, it didn't run out. And one thing I know about bears is when you shoot at a bear, it's not like an elk or deer at long range. Bears run like they were freaking shocked by lightning, and they run as long and as far as they can. So it not coming out of that little patch made me think he's probably right.
Yep.
But that was damn impressive. On that executive order, what actually?
Oh, so here's the deal. You know, I did that whole thing in that review that when I pitted the 300 Win Mag against the 30 Nosler, and hey, here we go again. I'll use whatever works the best for what I need it to do. And so there's all this hype out there on these Nosler cartridges. And, you know, you went the 28 Nosler route. I said, you know, I'm going to build a 30 Nosler and just see, you know. And it's fine. It's a fine rifle. It shoots very well, and it's got good velocity. But I worked that load up. I tried like three or four different powders in it. I just wasn't quite seeing the velocity that I thought I should be seeing. And that's when I started stuffing them full of N570 and got to the 3,100 feet per second point and said, wow, that's pretty good. And so I was about done with that whole comparison thing, you know, and I was going to settle on, hey, my 300 Win Mag runs them at about 3,035 feet per second. The 30 Nosler's run 3,100. So there is a little bit of a gain there. And then I thought, you know what? I've never put N570 in my 300 Win Mag. So in that thing, I said, well, I'm going to start working up. And so I start going up one grain at a time with N570 and working up and watching the velocity on this. And I got up there around 80 grains or 81 grains, and it was almost there. And I said, you know, I'm going right to 82.2 is my load in that 30 Nosler. And I stuffed it in that 300 Win Mag. And guess what? It popped up 3,100. So my old 300 Win Mag ran at the same velocity. Now, it may be a little higher pressure because it's got a little smaller case, but not that much smaller. It's not a whole lot of different. We're talking about a few grains here. So I'm done with that. I'm going to hunt with that rifle until I wear it out. In fact, I ordered two barrels for it because I didn't know, you know, I knew I was going to lean on it and I might burn one up pretty quick. So I got two barrels chambered and threaded for it. They both are Christensen orange carbon fiber barrels. They both shoot sub half minute. And so I'll probably hunt with that thing for a while unless somebody talks me out of it. But I love the Lone Peak titanium action. I love the weight of the rifle, and
it kills wolves really, really well.
Yeah.
It's evil, wolf,
yeah, it will kill wolves. And, you know, I'm going to hunt with it until I get tired of it or something else comes along that might look better or whatever. But if I was to do it all over again with what I know now, it'd be chambered in 300 Win Mag.
Do you think you could have put a little, any more powder in that 30 Nosler? Or is that pretty much max?
No, it's right at the end. I was there. I had it up above to where the pressure showed up, and I even started to see the primer pockets loosen and backed it down to where it'll run, you know, and that's where it's running. It's a safe load, but it ain't no sissy load, you know, it's right there.
How long is the barrels on those two guns?
Just under 28, I think. I'm 27 and 3/4 on a 30 Nosler, and just right at 28 on the 300 Win Mag, so not enough difference in length of barrels.
No. I think when I asked you about hunts, you forgot about the best one.
The best one?
Yeah. The Rockside Long Range Only Bear Hunt.
Oh, the Bear Extravaganza. The Bear
Extravaganza, that's the way to put it.
The Bear Extravaganza slash Wolf
Hunt. Yeah, we didn't see a fucking bear, so we had to kill some wolves hunt.
I don't care. The three of us have hunted a lot together. We're never going to top that wolf hunt.
That was awesome.
We're never going to do that again.
No.
That was a game changer.
Until spring.
Until spring. That was. Yep. I can't believe we didn't see any bears. This is a place where you see a lot of bears usually, at least one or two a day. I saw one bear, and it was on a bait the last day before we left. But by God, we saved the hunt by shooting some wolves.
And the whole deal of being able to go in there and repeat that calling act, of course, you know, Justin's got a lot of experience calling coyotes and stuff, but to put a plan together and go in there and pull that off repeatedly,
that was cool.
Yeah, I hope to do it again.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming on. I don't know why you talk so much, Justin, but it was a full hour. I'll have to have you guys on again. Jeff, I do have to have you back on because everybody wants to talk in-depth reloading at some point.
Yeah, I'd be glad to do that. And you know, you're always learning with this precision hand-loading stuff, and I've learned some stuff with this ELR rifle about case sizing, and I'm using Warner Tool dies on this deal, and oh, there's something to be said for sizing these things properly. Not your average hunting rifle, even your average long-range rifle is probably not stuff that everybody want to go through the pains or the price to do it. But there is something to be said for good dies.
I don't mean to cut you off, but did you do that HBN on this rifle?
I haven't. There was no time. I talked to Dan Smitko at Cutting Edge and talked to him about HBN and these. And he said it shouldn't hurt anything. It'd probably be fine. Mm-hmm. But when you're running these cutting edge solids, lathe turn bullets like this, especially with the seal type band, you know, there's just not a lot of bearing surface there. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to see the improvement we see over a rifle with a cup core that has a lot more bearing surface. So
right.
I didn't think it'd be a big thing. I don't think it'd hurt anything, and there'd probably be a little bit of a gain to it, mm-hmm. but it's not going to be the kind of gains that we see with other rifles.
Probably not worth all the time and the trouble, right?
It may not be.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, Justin. We'll have you on again for Gear Talk.
You bet.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.